105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Academy FM 105.9, The Sound of Folkestone, and the BizConnect radio show. I'm delighted that I'm joined in the studio today by my fabulous co-host,
Charlie Grimmo-Gillam from Red Key Concepts. Good afternoon, Martin.
Charlie, lovely to have you with us, so your smiley face, as always. And we've also got two super studio guests with us today. Why don't you introduce them for us?
So we've got a healthcare-themed show today, and so we're delighted to have Gary Turner from Turner Jackson and Day Associates. They're an architectural practice based in Whitstable, and we'll hear a lot more about them and what they do. And then Adam Hutchison from Belmont Healthcare.
Brilliant. Guys, lovely to have you with us today.
Hello, Martin.
I know it's been a busy weekend for some of you. Adam and Charlie, tell us what you were up to on Saturday night.
We were lucky enough not together to go, but simultaneously be at the boxing.
Fantastic.
So you were at the stadium.
At the Tyson Fury fight. Yeah. But you didn't bump into each other.
No.
That would have been funny, wouldn't it?
Far too many people there.
Yeah.
Just the 96.
Exactly.
Brilliant. And Gary, you've just come back off holiday as well.
Yes. Back from 2 weeks in Tenerife.
Fantastic. So this is a bit of a baptism of fire for you, isn't it? Yeah. First day back in the office and you're on a live radio show. Fantastic. Good. Well, as Charlie said, we've got a very much a sort of healthcare theme to the show today. We're going to be talking to Adam in a minute just after we play some music to find out what it's like running a care business at the moment, particularly in the aftermath of COVID. And I think we're also going to be talking to Gary about some of the challenges in designing and building care homes, really, that are fit for purpose and fit for the future needs of patients and society in general, I think, Charlie.
Yeah, and I think also it'd be interesting to get both your views, especially yours, Adam, on the challenges that you guys face as the NHS does as a whole. Obviously, all the another side to providing healthcare for individuals, but obviously there's an ageing population, a growing population. Mm. And before we came on show, obviously you were telling us about your potential expansion plan. So it'd be quite good to sort of understand the challenges that you've been facing as well and continue to do so.
Mm. Brilliant. So lots to talk about, but I think what we'll do now is we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Good afternoon. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host in the studio today,
Charlie Grimmo-Gillam.
Charlie, I think it's time we talk to our first guest. We've got Adam Hutchison with us today from Belmont Healthcare. Adam, it's lovely to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Do tell us a little bit about your business, please, in terms of what you do, where you are, and the sort of range of healthcare services that you guys offer, please.
Yeah, we'll do. And thanks for the opportunity, because I suppose people don't always really understand the crux of how some of these sort of social care organisations actually work. Mm. So, we're Belmont Healthcare. We're predominantly based within sort of Kent and East Sussex, where we have some services in and around other parts of the country as well. Our primary focus began as a care home organisation. So we ran some small care homes in Kent, and it's kind of grown from there, really, where we're now more of a multifaceted sort of care business. So we offer a range of services from sort of short stay, long stay within a care home, rehabilitation being our sort of key focus in helping people get out of hospital and then back into their own homes. Mm-hmm. And then we also support people actually in their own homes should they need to through a sort of sister service that we offer, which is called Belmont At Home. And the reason for that is we try and do a little bit more, less tunics and logoed cars and more kind of, a bit more sort of support for people in their own homes that may not want fully rounded care. So we kind of go from all stages, really, all the way from really severe support with dementia, Parkinson's, sort of end of life, sort of cancer support, all the way through to general escort companionship. Out, helping with the day-to-day tasks, whether that's a bit of shopping or going out for the day and having somebody there if family aren't able to support that directly.
That's a really good point, isn't it? Because I think, you know, loneliness is one of those sort of areas where, you know, particularly older people, you know, really struggle in their sort of day-to-day lives, isn't it?
Loneliness and social isolation is one of the key concerns, and people can kind of forget about it, where they seem to think, well, oh, don't want people going into a care home. What an awful place, you know, thanks to things like Panorama and stuff, that sort of filled us with that much glory. But if you've got an individual, so I look at my, I have a 91-year-old grandmother, and she lives at home on her own.
Fantastic.
But she lives near where I live. Mm-hmm. She has all the sort of tools within the home to support her, but she has an amazing community around her. So her neighbours are always knocking and support. So we always know that there is that companionship and that support and this family there. But people don't have that. And I remember when we set up Belmont at Home, the idea kind of came. Yes, there's lots of home care companies, but the passion for it came when I looked across. A lady used to live opposite where I used to live, and there was a key box on the door.
Yes, yeah.
And people would turn up, you know, sort of a logoed car, tunics on, stomp up the drive, open a key box, open the door, go in. 15 minutes later, they would leave, and then they'd come back in like 2 or 3 hours' time, and that would happen every day. And you just think, okay, somebody wants to be at home, but is there really support for that individual? What can you do in sort of 12, 15 minutes that you're sort of turning up? And is that person getting any sort of engagement? So I think it's really important.
And also that the care that they're getting, the carers that are actually getting there, aren't always the same people, are they? Yeah. They're a variety of different staff, whoever's available. And I think as you're elderly, it's much more beneficial to get a more sort of uniformed and sort of tailor-made care service.
Absolutely, and it's not always readily available. So I think, we've taken the decision just to be a bit more structured with it by only saying that this is the type of service that we should be delivering, and kind of not trying to fit into another way of working. And I think certainly offering a wider range of support is where we've kind of gone, especially as we come out of the pandemic now, which we saw a lot of issues that faced within sort of NHS and care homes, and it was, you know, very well documented. You are having people that are making that decision about, well, where do I actually want to be? If we see anything like that again, do we want to be in this position again? Mm. So there is, we went through sort of 9 or 10 months, I think, sort of back end of 2020, where nobody would go into a care home. You know, I think that the entire country was at its lowest occupancy point in sort of mid-60s, I think, average occupied sort of care homes, which was kind of a big, considering there's 216 being built as we speak in the UK. Yeah. You kind of think, well, if suddenly people don't want to go into those, what's going to happen? But that's sort of changing. But there is now giving people more choice. I think that's certainly where we were. We don't want to pigeon ourselves. We used to call Belmont care homes, but we just changed it to Belmont Healthcare. We rebranded ourselves. It's like, well, actually, we don't just want to do care homes. We want to have a much wider, rounded approach. And then the choice becomes more about the individual and their needs, rather than, well, we need to fill this service for some sort of income. Let's focus on that, which I think is the wrong way round.
So the idea being that the aim is that you try and keep the elderly in their houses for as long as you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Providing a similar care regardless, you know, rather than having them to be moved to a home.
Every single person has their own individual needs. Yeah. And I think it starts with assessing that need and knowing what suits best for them and their family. And I think a lot of people don't realise that they have that opportunity to do that choice. They just think, oh, well, I've got to go into a care home, or that my auntie or uncle, grandparent has to go into a care home. No, not at all.
Yes.
They can have whatever they want, depending on what service wrap they want. Obviously, everything comes with a cost, and some of it's supported by a local authority, or some of it might be paid privately. But ultimately, you should be able to say, well, what we do it with everything else. We choose what we want. So why is it that we don't do that in care, where we can go, well, actually, let's start here and let's see where we get. And I think with advancements in technology and assistive innovation, it's meant that people should be able to stay at home as long as they possibly can, as long as you assess that need of that person. And
so is that one of the kind of the key trends in the industry, for want of a better word now, that trend towards, you know, caring for people in their homes?
It's interesting. I think there is two schools of thought, and I think, again, it's down to the individual organisations. I think if you're not having a wider view, if you're focused on one particular delivery of service, then your focus is going to be on that delivery of service. there is a, I think it's, again, it's down to the individual. There are a lot of people that would prefer to, surely, all of us, if we were looking for care for ourselves, we are going to want to stay in our own homes for as long as possible. That's just a key fact. And I think that...
In my bed, in, you know, in my bathroom, in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm. How can we facilitate that? And I don't think people think about it. Mm. But people... Care is always made, the decision about care is always made as a crisis decision, and that's the problem. And what we all have to get better at doing is we're all living longer, we all have a lot wider families, so we need to be thinking about it now, where we go, okay, so if I've got a family member who is of this age, what is it that they want and how can they be supported? And actually almost deal with it earlier rather than going, oh, everything's falling apart, let's phone the council and find out what they say. And I'm sorry, you know, as much as I, but that is the wrong way to go about it, because the way in which the funding mechanism works, we don't want to get into too much because it's sort of swashed around on the news too much as it is, but ultimately if you phone the local authority and said I need care, you're just going to get put into a queue and go in, oh well, do you want that or do you want that? They're not going to help you with the decision. And I think people just need to grow their awareness of going, well, what might somebody need in the future?
Yeah. And we all the options, and, you know, how can we do
we need to plan for it, don't we? In the same way that we plan for our retirement with the pension, we need to plan for our care, you know.
Even more so, because you don't realise what you can and can't achieve with it. And actually, some people say, oh, you've got to go into a care home and pay, you know, £1,500 a week. It's like, well, do you? Who's told you that? Have you really thought about, you know, that £1,500 a week investment could be made into making the home more assistive, and then you get some organisations to come in support. And it might be eventually a care home is the option. Obviously, I'm not going to sort of dilute my own industry, but ultimately... It should be about those people making the decision, and care homes are definitely there for that wider sort of challenge and support as people get, you know, can't be in a care home on can't be in their own home by themselves, and that might be companionship again, but it might be that they just need 24/7 support, which you're not going to get unless you have somebody as a live-in carer, which if you weigh up, you know, costing of that versus costing a care home, you are going to find it's cheaper to be in a care home. So it's a balancing act about, do you want to wake up and go into a living area, even though you might have physical disabilities, but you can see another sort of 20 or 30 people every day and kind of have that, you know, that time again.
Is that a conversation we can have with you as ultimately, you know, perhaps, you know, as we get older, and we need advice in the first instance, can we come to Belmont Healthcare and have that conversation with you, and you ask us those kinds of questions? What kind of care would you like?
Yeah, that's definitely where we've moved ourselves towards over the last sort of 18 months, 2 years, is to be a lot more about how we want people to talk to us and sort of guide them. We have sort of an FAQs on our website that really sort of focuses on that. We always say for people are welcome to talk to us. And because we have a wider range of services, it means that we can have that conversation, because we're not, you know, businesses are the same, is that you will always focus on what is your income source. If you only had one income source, you're going to take people down that income source. That's the way, you know, sadly it works. So by having those multiple options, I think that we're opening ourselves up to a wider marketplace, but also I just think it's the right thing to do.
Fantastic. Well, I think what we'll do now is we'll play a little bit of music, and when we come back we'll talk about some of the challenges that that your industry is facing at the moment, Adam. I mean, obviously we've just come you know, through a pandemic that no one saw coming. We've now got, you know, inflation, obviously, you know, running through the economy, which must present its own challenges. I know you have your own investment plans to grow your business, so it'd be nice to talk about all of that when we come back. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Biz Connect radio show today. We've got a healthcare theme to our show, and we're talking with Adam Hutchison at the moment from Belmont Healthcare, a healthcare provider in Kent and East Sussex, and also in the West Midlands. And Adam, before the break, we were talking about the approach that you like to take, you know, when you're having a conversation about later life planning with people, and that is kind of, you know, to be objective about what their needs and what they're wants ultimately look like as part of that process? And that's very refreshing to hear. And I guess the key point you were making there is that we need to think about this before it becomes care critical, as it were. And then we can only really react, as opposed to kind of plan for our future needs. Is that right?
Yeah, I just think this has to be an awareness. I use the phrase education just because people aren't educated on it, and you kind of come about it when the decisions about care are always made in crisis, and people instantly think care equals NHS. And it's understanding that they're just two key streams. And I think it gets sort of convoluted in the discussion, and certainly through the pandemic, what does what? And I think people need to be very, very clear on the NHS is there for acute emergency services and operations. That's
absolutely
what the NHS is there. Mm. The recovery part is not the NHS. Mm. It's about where that then comes, and that could be funded in different ways. But, social care impacts, and this is what people don't realise, people from the age of zero through to, end of life in their hundreds. Mm. Social care is there for young adults, young children, learning disabilities, mental health, autism, all the way through the spectrum through to what we deal with at the sort of later scale in sort of older peoples with dementia and Parkinson's.
Would advocate somebody, not necessarily, ringing for an ambulance in the first instance. They might have had an accident at home, they might have fallen over, but, why not contact your local, care providers, for example?
I think there's a place for that with assistive technology. I think that we have to kind of take the pressure off the health service in terms of where is the need. I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way, but ultimately I think we should be, it's a responsibility of providers like myself to be looking at ways in which we can better achieve support for people. Mm. And it's not always going to be, I don't think it should always be a 999 call to emergency services, especially with sort of the wait times on that now. And that needs to be prioritised because it could be around, there could be a local support mechanism that could help. Yeah, especially if you've got a care provider that's in the same village that you're already aware of, that's linked into you. If something happens, they could be there straight away, and then they go, oh, actually, yes, definitely, there is an emergency here. But at least somebody's there with them, rather than, I'm hearing sort of 5 to 9 hour waits in sort of Kent at the moment.
In a corridor, perhaps,
just for an ambulance.
Ambulance.
If you've had a fall, they may have to wait that long in the house.
Gosh.
There's a 9 hour wait.
On their own. And I think it's good for the listeners to appreciate that they could contact yourselves at Belmont Healthcare and find out potentially different mechanisms to support elderly people, elderly relatives who are living at home that don't necessarily need to go into a home, a nursing home. You can provide them with that particular care and support so that they can contact yourselves if they're in need of
absolutely.
Assistance.
And there's lots of provision like that around Kent where people can support. And I think it's just the awareness that there are people there to give you some guidance. And it's not just about going, well, I have to go here because that's what I think I should do. And that education all of us need to be doing that a little bit earlier, whether it's for ourselves or whether it's for supporting people who are close to us about actually what might happen if this is, do I understand what social care actually is? And I think it's a real misconception. I've mentioned it before. I don't think the government have helped massively in terms of trying to identify what the key differences are. But people forget that social care, a quote that I used a lot during the pandemic is, the social care employs pretty much the same amount of people as the NHS. So, it's a 1.4 million people. Plus, I think the NHS is 1.5, 1.6, something like that. But it's pretty close. Yet, in the, I think it's 180,000 hospital beds now, where there's 468,000 care home beds. So you can see that the sector is serving with a similar amount of people, three times the amount of people. That's just in elderly care home. We're not even in children's services, younger adults, all of that. So it's a massive, massive industry that needs to be given a lot more recognition, because the people that are working in it are just unbelievable.
Well, you mentioned the pandemic there, so I want to sort of change the tack of the conversation slightly now. We've obviously, we were talking off air about the fact that you were pre-COVID, looking to expand your business with new care home facilities, for example. All of that had to go on hold, effectively, for a couple of years. But you're back now looking to grow your business and expand your business. And we are an ageing population. That is the reality of our population in the UK. And so there is going to be an increased demand and need for the kinds of services that you offer. But what are some of the key challenges that you're facing at the moment? And I would imagine, you know, recruitment is a major challenge to, you know, inspire, you know, the next generation of carers to come into the industry on the back of what has been an incredibly difficult time for, you know, your business and the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, recruitment is probably the number one challenge on pretty much everybody's lips. But I think that's a broad spectrum across a lot of sectors. For us, I go back, I think I've said it twice already, it's about just educating people on what it's like to work in social care. And it's an industry sector, the same as construction would be, because people have to realise that there's multiple jobs within it. It's not just the carer side of the role.
Yes, yeah.
There is opportunities to grow within that carer role into, you know, whether that's focused
management,
on being a specialist.
Management, do you mean? And,
well,
yeah,
there's specialism, and, so yeah. You could be moving into more wellbeing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have something we call wellbeing coordinators, so they focus on, you know, bringing life to the homes or the services. So they're involved in organising the trips and taking people out and coming up with sort of like different, like we have like My Life books and we share them amongst staff and stuff, so everybody knows who each other is and what they've done, so you can have a positive life conversation with somebody. Because if you're in your mid-20s, you might not know what happened in the 1950s, and we try and say this is what this person was doing at that particular time, so they can have a meaningful conversation. There's stuff like that. But there's also management. I mean, of two of our care homes in Kent, both the registered managers with sort of level 5 borderline university level qualifications now started as one was a night carer and one was a part-time carer, and they're both now running sort of, one's a 46 bed service and another's a 48 bed service in Kent, and they've come through that development. I think that's really important to help people understand that there is, you know, it's not just about this minimum wage hourly paid role, which people keep focusing
falling
on so
into
much.
It, like,
they just
falling
focus
into
on
construction
it.
And it's there's opportunities in you know, obviously your sector as well as the construction sector, and as you say, it's educating and it's getting people to know that there are opportunities out there and challenging ones.
Which, not just that, you could, there is that, but there's also the sort of diversification within an organisation. You know, we've had somebody that joined us as a carer, which actually now is in our finance team and runs our payroll. So
brilliant.
It's because that was what they started, and then it was just that those roles were available. We have marketing roles. We have, you know, so all of those things. We have somebody that does our social media content. And it's a healthcare business, because actually,
well, you're a business like any other business, aren't you? That's the reality. And so I wanted to sort of bring,
talk about that,
you know, come on to the next point, really, which is, how are you guys coping with, you know, inflation at the moment, you know, operating costs? I mean, you know, the headline rate is, what is it, 7-8% at the moment, but I'm sure you're seeing double digit increases in your industry. You know, how do you manage your business around that at the moment? Because you can't just say to your, you know, to your customers, your clients, you know, oh, I need to charge you another £100 a week now, you know, because, you know, our food bill's gone up, or, you know, whatever, you know, our energy bill crucially has gone up. You know, how are you managing that? How are you coping with that at the moment?
It's a difficult one, because I do find it frustrating, because people, and the easiest way that I always try and get somebody to understand is say, how expensive is it to run your house? Times that by 48 people and put in, you know, 1-5, 1-4 staff ratio. So today, in our home that I came from today in New Romney, Madeira Lodge, we have 48 individuals being cared for in there, and there's 22 staff in there today. So there's 70 people in there today in that building. And that's all of that, you know, we provide all the food, laundry, everything is happening within that. So think of all of those costs.
Heating, water, everything.
And so we're part paid. So we're 50% paid for by the local authority or the CCGs, and 50% is paid for privately. That's how that particular home, and I'm not scared of talking about it. We increased our private pay by 6%. Our costs have gone up by 13.7%.
Gosh.
And our local authority and CCG increase this year was 3%.
Right.
So that's how much they gave us increase. So we,
shocking,
our national living wage increase. So, you know, if a national living wage has gone up by 6.8%, which it has done, we don't just that's not just people on that. So if you've got somebody who's, because nobody's who works for us on National Living Wage, but so but you have to keep the balance, don't you? So you have to go up and up.
Of course.
So that goes across. So it's a 7%. Yeah. So we've paid 7% increase on all of our staff costs. People really don't kind of tune into that. So ultimately,
it's a challenge.
It comes off the bottom line. So but that's why we've took the decision rather than putting that 13.7% onto everything, because we can't, because we're 50% funded by, we can't control our cost increases. That's why we're focused on diversification of services. So it means that rather than just having, we can only have that home in Madeira's lodge is a prime example in New Romney. We can't, we're not fixed to just 48 people. We look at doing wider services. We look at going out in the community. We look at doing transport. We look at doing trips. We look at doing additional services that means that we can increase that way. So the challenges are vast, but we can't expect anybody to fix them for us. So we just have to look at how we can make sure that the individuals that are within our teams are inspired to stay, because that's really important. And also, it means that we continually get people to want to use our services. And that's our focus. Because I feel if we drive that, we will sort out the costs in the long run.
Fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, fascinating insight there. I think what we'll do is we'll play a bit more music. And then when we come back, I'd love to bring Gary Turner into the conversation. Gary from Turner, Jackson and Day Associates, architects practice based in Whitstable. We'll talk about what you guys do in the healthcare sector. But also then I think we'll talk about, you know, fitness for purpose in terms of, you know, buildings, for example, care homes moving forward. Forwards and how they need to be kind of, you know, future fit in the context of everything else that's going
and
on.
How many more there are needed, because and, well, obviously we're an aging population.
Exactly
so,
that, yeah.
The demand's going to be huge.
So do stay with us, and again, we'll be straight back after this little bit of music.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the BizConnect radio show today with my fabulous co-host,
Charlie Graham-O'Gillam. Afternoon.
And myself, Martin White, and also our super studio guest. We've just been talking with Adam Hutchison from Belmont Healthcare all about his business and some of the challenges facing his business at the moment. But what I'd like to do now is turn to our second guest, Gary Turner from Turner, Jackson and Day Associates, a firm of architects and architects practice based in Whitstable. Gary, lovely to have you on
the show, Martin.
Today.
Great, great. Thank you very much for inviting me in.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit, by way of background, a little bit about your practice and the kind of the areas that you get involved please.
Yeah, we're an architectural studio in Whitstable. We've got a great, talented team of architects and technologists. We work all over the country, predominantly Kent, Sussex, Surrey and London, but we travel all over, really, depending on you know, where the sites are, etc. We deal with a lot of residential developments, so that could be one-off bespoke housing up to larger sites of sort of 200-plus units. We were lucky enough to win a couple of design awards last year for the best luxury development in the country. And
fantastic, well done. Yeah, it's good, yeah.
What House Awards.
Where was that, just out of interest?
One of them was the... it was quite near to one of your care homes, actually, down on the coast. Seascape, that was the a one-off house that won the best luxury house. And then...
Is that Camber Sands? Is that around there somewhere? Where is that?
Yeah, sort of Great Stone along the coast.
Okay,
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we won the other one for a development of 36 apartments at Sandgate, overlooking the sea there, which is a lovely sort of high-end development that we did for a... one of our long-standing clients, so that was great.
I bet they were delighted as well, weren't they?
Indeed, yeah. Yes.
Brilliant,
yeah,
well done.
Yeah, Sunnydale House.
Help sell them, no doubt. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do a lot of sort of high-end residential works. We've just finished three lovely houses up in Highgate, which we did for one of our international clients. He sort of retains them for his rental portfolio. Mm. So they're rented to David Luiz and Taylor Swift at the moment. So
wow.
Real sort of high-end stuff.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of commercial industrial units, a lot of school work. We're heavily involved in the leisure sector, so we do a lot of bars, nightclubs, hotels. just finished the Sands Hotel down in Margate.
Oh, yes, know it well, yeah.
Yes, that was one of ours. That was a lovely little boutique hotel.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, we do cover most sectors, really.
So really varied, yeah.
You've got a fantastic portfolio, haven't you, within the healthcare sector as
which
is a great correlation for today's show.
Yes, so, indeed.
Tell us about some of that then. What sort of projects are we talking about here?
We started years ago. We worked for NHS trusts and then got into the sort of care sector. Mm. So we a lot of our work is we do design new builds. Mm. We've just finished a 66 bed in Ipswich for one of our clients, but predominantly most of our work is sort of 10 to 30 bed extensions, remodelling. Older care homes predominantly, so it'd be ex-local authority homes that are sort of not really fit for purpose anymore. Mm. So whether it be a client's just bought them and we're adapting them and converting them, or you know, somebody's already in the home and have realised that they're not particularly fit for purpose anymore. Right. So we go in, remodel the homes. A lot of the bedrooms are still the old sort of 10 square metres without en suites, unfortunately. Mm. So. Mm. It's a case of remodelling. A normal easy fix would be converting three bedrooms into two, enabling you to, you know, get the sort of minimum 12 square metre rooms and an accessible ensuite onto the room as well.
Mm. And I think that's really important from a construction point of view as well, that it's enabling the facilities to be there and to be user-friendly.
Yes, indeed.
And to be acceptably user-friendly as well. And I think you might know the statistic better than I, Adam, but I think the population for healthcare is due to rise by about 120-130% over the next 20 years. So the demand for such facilities is only ever going to increase.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
And Adam, from your point of view, just how easy is it to do that? I mean, you know, looking at your existing sort of care home infrastructure, you know, is it easier to expand and kind of build on existing premises than it is to go out and acquire new premises? What's the thought process that you go through there?
For me, I think it's very much about the I really like the refurbishment side of things and the extensions. I think it's much more, I think you can get some of the character of some of the older sort of buildings, and they're in some really nice locations. I think the new build stuff is great, and I really, you know, but personally, I think sometimes they do feel a little bit like apartment blocks. Mm. And if you're in your 80s, and I don't think you've ever probably been lived in somewhere like that, it's more, you know, your high ceilings, your big bay windows. I think there's some really sort of character features that you get from some of the older buildings, but they certainly don't work and aren't fit for purpose. We've just recently been through exactly this, where we've had two homes that were next door to each other. We closed one of them down, moved everybody from that into a new, and we just refurbished one, added 22 bedrooms, turned everything into ensuite wet rooms. Mm. So we still got some of the character, but then ended up with sort of spaces that were a lot more accessible. This is the new Romney that I mentioned earlier. Mm. So now we have a sort of sea-fronted home, which isn't the old style sea-fronted home. And I think Kent is one of the interesting sort of counties for that, because it has a lot of care homes.
Yes, it does, much more than some other
counties. And a lot of them are those older, by the sea, where people used to come on holiday type buildings. And I think there's some really good opportunities. I mean, that's a kind of almost our business strategy, is we find those sort of older, sort of coming to the end of their days care homes, and we will go in and we will sort of get the planning permission, and we'll go out and, you know, speak to architects like yourself and say, like, this is what we'd like to do. How can you help us do that? And we sort of build that vision of it being more future-proof, but still keeping some of the character.
Yeah. It can't be an easy job there, Gary, because it's not just a question of sort of building a sort of, you know, adding a block and brick kind of extension on the back of an existing building, is it? You've got to look at the whole fabric of what's already there, and then you need to integrate that somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly, obviously, if it's a home that's running, you've got to.
Yeah.
You know, the main focus is on the residents, obviously, the care and welfare of the residents. Mm. So, we always work very closely with the principal designer, which is CDM regulation. So it's all health and safety driven. Mm-hmm. So we look very closely at that. The sort of interface with the running of the home. It can be very challenging.
Yeah. I remember when my one of my neighbours was, well, I've always got neighbours doing work, but one in particular, when they were having new electrics put in on an old house I used to live in, and the noise it made, you know, just drilling out the sort of the hole for the cables to go in was scary. And I guess that's an important consideration, isn't it, Adam? You can't have people being, you know, disturbed to that extent if they're, you know, already domiciled there.
Yeah, that's a challenge, as we have to work with people like Gary to say, right, how can we sort of value engineer this to make sure that we accommodate that? I mean, like I said, we've just been through this. We opened it in November and it was extremely challenging to add 22 bedrooms to a home that was existing and have it there. But fortunately, you have to look at building the majority of it outside, not breaking through when you need to. So build the skeleton. I think if you're going to refurb full scale existing, you have to decant or empty the building. Right. It's just totally unfair to do that. We looked at doing one recently and we actually got planning permission for it, but we'd have had to take the roof off. Mm. And it was just like, well, there's no point. We've got to close it. And in the end, we decided not to do anything with it, and we've actually since sold it on for a...
Reminds me of an old Carry On film I was watching at the weekend. Carry On Abroad, I think it was, and they were staying in a Spanish hotel. they were still building it, and they sort of peeled back the tarpaulin and were sort of waving at the builders, you know. But no, interesting. But no, I know, Gary, you're also very into your technology, which I think is so important today, and in particular, building information modelling, or BIM.
Yes, indeed.
And that is obviously a key, a really important kind of tool, I guess, today, in particular, going back to what we were talking about in terms of inflation and cost spiralling and productivity and everything else. So tell me how you guys use that. On your projects?
Well, when I started in architecture, obviously it was all on the drawing board back in the old days. Yeah. So we've moved into AutoCAD now, so all of our projects are drawn in AutoCAD. But there was some new software developed a few years ago called Revit, which it basically, the old ways would have been to draw the plans, elevations and sections as separate drawings, and then you do all the detailing. But with Revit, you're actually drawing a three-dimensional model right from the beginning. So you draw the model and then you can cut all the sections, plans. It will produce all of the door and window schedules. It does a full bill of quantities. So you input all of the building materials and it gives you a full schedule. We've also got a program called Enscape, which we've got various softwares that produce high-end computer-generated images of our products, but Enscape sort of links in with Revit and BIM. We can do full sort of walkthroughs of the finished product.
It's so impressive. Yeah. I mean, Gary's very kindly shown us some of the projects that you've been working on, and it's really impressive. And as main contractors, the ones that have to actually build what you design,
it
makes life a lot easier, and we can be proactive at a much earlier stage, because we can do the walk round and say, well, what about this? Should we change this? Yeah. Can we change this? Should we change this?
And it brings it to life for the client, I guess. Brings it to life for Adam. He can see it on.
Yeah. I mean, we can email a client a QR code.
Yeah.
You can scan it with your phone, and then you're actually in the middle of a site doing a sort of walkthrough. Yeah. So
fantastic.
It's a great product.
Good, brilliant. Well, I think, again, we'll play a little bit of music when we come back for the final part of the show. I just want to talk about some of the challenges facing the care industry moving forwards. And again, I think we'll have a bit of a group discussion on that. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect show today. We've had a fascinating conversation around healthcare and the issues facing the healthcare industry. What I'd like to do now, as a sort of group discussion, if we can, guys, is focus around some of the sort of key emerging trends in the industry, and also perhaps some of the threats and challenges that the industry is going to be facing moving forwards. I know that's a massive subject area in itself, but I think there's some key themes in there. And, you know, at the moment, for example, you know, everybody's very focused around net zero, climate change. You know, how do we build and design care homes for the future, if you like? Care homes that are going to be future fit, if you like, in the context of net zero and climate change. And Gary, over to you. Is that something that you're increasingly indeed. Being asked for?
Yes, I mean, we've built passive houses in the past, and certainly not most of the care homes now, we make a point of introducing renewable energy on there, make the buildings very sustainable. So they've all got PVs, ground source heat pumps, that sort of thing. So,
which you can do on modern buildings, I guess, but you know, that's a more difficult kind of ask on a retrofit, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I mean, we're doing a few at the moment where we're able to put PVs on the roof to reduce the sort of the cost that way. But as you say, it's very difficult to retrofit that sort of stuff on an old home.
Adam, how are you approaching that as, you know, as a business, sustainability and carbon?
I have a question for Gary on that. I was just going to say, do you find that there's much, is there like a cost-benefit analysis that's done around it? Because sometimes a lot of these, they're focused on, oh, we have to do it. Adding those efficiencies, do you see that?
Yeah, we've got a very good company we work with, particularly with the PV, so they can do a very detailed sort of payback analysis. So you can look at, you know, a payback period for the product and what the savings would be on a sort of monthly basis, which is very useful.
Mm. And I think if that information was out there more and more readily available, people would consider going down the PV route a lot more, especially when you're operating businesses like yours, Adam.
And cost is everything at the moment, I guess, you know, in terms of operating margin.
Always going to be looking at opportunities of how to do it. A lot of the times, especially with the retrofit, there is savings over time, but it's the cost of installation. By the time you see the return, you don't know what the landscape's going to be. I think there's always a concern, especially around electronic, what the people are doing at the moment is, you saw it with the solar panels, is it was, there was all the grants and everything was available, and then you started doing it and then they took it all away, and it was like, oh, well, what was the point? So my concern is that's just going to happen again.
Yeah. You know? The same for the insulation, wasn't it? Everyone was getting their houses pumped full of insulation, and then that was taken away quite quickly too.
Need a bit more long-termism and stuff like that.
Definitely. Yeah. And joined-up thinking, Now, we mentioned recruitment earlier on in the show, and I know, you know, that's obviously a massive challenge for the industry moving forwards. And, you know, we've got the kind of the emergence of kind of digital technology. That seems to be relentless, the pace of development there. And we've got artificial intelligence. We've got all sorts of things, but on a kind of core recruitment level, you know, what are you doing on the ground, Adam, to kind of to attract people into the industry? I know you've got something going on in
Well, there's
Kent.
A couple of things. I mean, as an organisation, we're just heavily focused on benefits and what the role is actually about, really trying to educate people, like I've talked to it about, and also kind of give people flexibility and sort of enjoyment in the role and make them understand it a lot more. But in Kent specifically, with another hat on, and I just wanted to have a quick chat about it, is there is something that we've just recently launched in the last sort of 3 weeks, which is called Kent Care Professionals, and it's a website that's purely focused on educating new people to the sector. There's videos, there's content on there about how you can get into the sector.
Brilliant.
And you can upload your CV, upload your details, and there's a team of people who will place you with care providers in Kent and Medway and help you get into the sector.
And what's
really
that
important.
Website, Adam? Sorry?
It's www.kentcareprofessionals.co.uk, and it's linked to my trade organisation, which is the Kent Integrated Care Alliance. And all the providers in Kent come together to try and improve the education. It's all not for profit.
Fantastic.
It's about getting people in the right place.
Brilliant. That's a great information source. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, look, guys, we are fast running out of time, but what I really want to do is get your contact details out there as well. So just give us a shout out for Belmont Healthcare, Adam, in terms of how we can get in touch with you, please.
Yeah, so main place is on our website, www.belmonthealthcare.co.uk, and our Facebook page, which is at Belmont Healthcare, where you can see videos and all sorts of stuff going on about what we do.
Fantastic. And if you really want to, you can also follow you on Twitter as well, which I do now.
I'm a bit more active on LinkedIn, to be fair, than I am on Twitter. I'm not great on Twitter.
And Gary, how about you? How can we get in touch with your practice?
Our website is www.turnerjacksonday.co.uk.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, I think that is the end of the show. I mean, it's
really
flown by today, hasn't
Thank
it been?
You. Yeah. Great guests. It's
fantastic.
Been really, really good.
Really insightful. Mm. As always, we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with another show. But I think for now, all that remains to do is to say thank you to our guests. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. And goodbye. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Brilliant. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye for now.
Thanks.
Bye.